Mr. Chadwick, Real 7. We're talking about your time with 7 Platoon C Company, 16th Battalion DLI. When you first went into Italy with them, and joined them in Italy, round about early October, possibly late September. And we're looking at sort of the conditions when you took up frontline post. Did you have much trouble with the German Air Force or much support from the RAF when you were in
East? Not required. The German Air Force by then had not existed. Not existed. So much so that we were getting artillery rank and file and commission rank transferred to the infantry to boost the numbers. There was no need for the attack guns to be manned. There was no attack formations left in the campaign. And consequently, the ones who were fit enough were transferred over to infantry. And took up the new role as platoon commanders of riflemen.
So, did the RAF ever act in? So it didn't have to deal with the German Air Force because it wasn't there, but did they ever support you? Did they?
The early parts of the campaign, of course, but at this the stage we were talking about, very little requirement.
Now, what about sniping? Was that much of a problem? Were the Germans much of a sniper?
I think sniping is a word which is an overestimated statement. You get people say, oh, he was shot by a sniper. Invariably, I find, from my own experience, that Irish confidence is flying at you from some direction, and if a fellow gets it out of the blue, it's always a sniper. When the most likely was 6 or 7 of them, just let him fly in the vicinity of where he told you was, and he stopped one. I think the sniper business is a bit overplayed, actually. I can't remember us using snipers.
So we didn't have snipers, and you weren't.
Invariably, a man who's a sniper is supposed to be a good shot. That ruled me out. It wasn't about me. I had to experience. But we never put snipers in. If there was a tricky one, I'd say, hey, Billy's a good shot. Tell him to look up at that window there. Sure, there's something in there. But the emphasis on snipers, I think, is overplayed.
What about machine gun fire? Was that much of a nuisance? Harassing or fixed line fire? Or
you mean enemy fire?
Both sides. Well, enemy first.
And our machine gun, again, 6 machine guns to a battalion. So you could say 2 to a company. Outstanding weapon.
The Vickers.
Absolutely an outstanding weapon. Infilade and defilade. I know it doesn't sound much. Not even a modification from the day it was made. No modification at all. Water cooled rather. A fantastic weapon to do every role, especially relief in the line.
I don't think they have the equivalent to the Vickers, but the Spandau machine gun, the equivalent to the LMG, was far superior. It spread its fire to the light machine gun, the brown light machine gun. The brown was so accurate, wonderful for the range, but we're not on the range, and the Spandau machine fired far faster. Whether that's an asset or not, I'm very dubious, because the faster you fire, the more you have to carry. shutter speed is a great asset in the long run, I wouldn't know. But for spraying and deflaying the fire, far better than the LNG.
How did the Germans use stand out against the Rhine?
The same as we use against them. Depends on the tactical situation entirely. I mean, some people used to say carry a Bren gun on patrol. I would never join to it. Too cumbersome, too heavy, and you've got to be off your mark when you're out there. And you can't be lumbering around, dropping to the floor, stretching the legs out, cocking it, in there, whereas you can just spray and get the hell out of it with a stem gun.
Let's move on to that then. How patrol works? What are the different types of patrols?
There's three main patrols. There's fighting patrols, where the rule is you must go out and engage the enemy. To let him know that you're there, which is the hardest patrol of the lot. The second one is the opposite, is the reconnaissance patrol, which is to go out and get information. Troop movements, how many troops are occupying said positions, etc., etc., to feed back to the intelligence. And the standing patrol, which is what it says, it's 200 yards or so forward of the FDL to avert an attack coming out the blue. They could get word back, and that 200 yards gives everybody the chance to be in position and ready. To me, to be truthful, fighting patrol is the toughest job an infantry soldier has.
Now, let's look at what each one of those patrols actually was. What would a fighting patrol consist of?
If you have the manpower, which you never have, 1 in 10, a corporal, a lance corporal, 8 riflemen, and a getaway man. Should everything go haywire, it used to be accepted as a very good job, the getaway man, because his job was to get back alive. If all the others went, at least you've got a man to come back and tell you what happened. You were engaged with a heavy force, and you were annihilated.
So how would they prepare for a fighting patrol then? Would you be briefed first?
You'd be told the area to go in and what information was wanted.
Now who would be briefed? Would you all be briefed, or would just the corporal be briefed and he'd brief you?
The corporal would go to the company commander, well, the team commander, and the company commander would brief the team commander. The team commander would brief the corporal or whoever was ice and patrol, and he would come back in turn and brief the soldiers taking part. Now, what I found very, very important about this business was, let me put a time factor on it. If you were going out at 8 o'clock at night and it was permitting, brief the patrol about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That leaves you 4 hours before you leave. And the reason I say that is you've got to draw your ammunition, you've got to check your equipment, you want to check your weapon, but it's certainly firing on all cylinders. Make sure your own guard right, your trousers tucked into your socks so there's no delay, there's no excess noise from the patrol. But most important, to keep the man occupied from the time he's told to the time he leaves, so he doesn't dwell on what's going to happen. He's too busy doing something. Not everybody did that, but I tried to.
That's when you were in command, but being given the orders, that's what you appreciated as well, would it?
If I was given an order, which I had at the time, I'd say at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for an 8 o'clock departure, I wouldn't mention it.
But what about when you were actually just a private? I mean, how did you cope with it when you were told?
It was all exciting to me, to be honest. I don't want to sound that type of a person. I'm not. I was frightened as an accident. But I've always tried, whatever I do, to do well. And it was a challenge.
Now, how
would I melt the skin? We've done the leg. I never told anybody. But I would never freeze, which I've seen them actually freeze and grab hold of you.
Now, you've told us some of the preparation, you know, about getting your kit and your uniform, checking everything. What weapons would you take out with you? You mentioned that you wouldn't take the brain, you'd take the stems.
Stems, if possible. A lot of them at the time had Thompson submachine carbines. A powerful weapon. But who needs that power? You've got enough of power with the stem. If anything wrong with the Thompson submachine carbine, to put it right, took certainly minutes as opposed to seconds. What they call HP stoppage is a hell of a thing to collect. Or you might have spent gas that's stripped and blocked the mechanism from working. Terrible thing to rectify. Okay for gangsters, but I much prefer the old state.
But did some people prefer the Thompson? Did they take my choice?
Well, some did. And take the chance. But of course, there wasn't all that many Thompson submachine carbine, and a rifle isn't a lot of use on patrol.
Would you take one as well, or just leave?
If you had a signal with you, he'd carry a rifle, because you wouldn't be expected to use it. That's for self protection, to cover yourself.
Would you take any other weapons, hand grenades or?
You take grenades, but to me, taking grenades. Certainly 36, but the minimum, because the only place you carry it is in the pouches around your person. And I mean, it's bad enough getting shot at and wounded without getting shot at and set a grenade off. You might get away with a wound, but if the grenade goes off, you go off. And of course, the almighty phosphorus grenade, that was a nightmare. To be truthful, most soldiers throw them. As soon as they got out the wire, they fling it and leave it. Because it wouldn't serve any massive thing if you hit with one, but that is gadget to carry.
So, anything else that you take with you? You've got the bare minimum of grenades.
Well, the only thing I say after that is the things you didn't take with you,
which is
photographs. You didn't take, you took nothing but your paper, your number, rank and name.
What about helmets? Would you wear
a camouflage helmet? Soft, a lot of the cases, preferably cap comforters, because you're in the dark, so there's no going to be, they can see your head to shoot at it. Far more comfortable than the tin hat. If you fall down the trip, and the tin hat hits the ground, it makes a hell of a din, so you sound well in them. Your boots, your soft shoes, your trousers tucked into your socks, everything else so that it didn't flap, and a cap comforter on. A, it kept you warm in inclement weather, and B, if you fell down, there was no one else for you.
Did you, I mean, you always see them blacking it with mud, or did you do that?
Oh, well, a bit of mud would do, off the ground, spit. Bit of salad and just rub it over your face. The waiter brought out these creams, but a bit of mud did the job. I mean, a white face does show up as much as the moon shines.
So, you go out, this is on the fighting patrol we're looking at here, we'll look at how they differ later. So, you go out at the appointed time. Would they have set up a password system so that for when you came back?
Oh, yes, you bet you. Band, castle, or whatever. Usually words that was coming to you. percentage of good idea. He knows where you're coming. He knows the gap you're heading for. But it could be a German patrol who got lost making the way there. So it challenges with that. But that's the only time it was really used.
Now, you're going out of the fighter procedure. How would you go out from... I mean, would you have wire in front at all? Barbed wire?
You have gaps in your wire.
You did have wire out there. I didn't ask that.
Yes.
Before.
Well, you have wire, a fairly static position, you have gaps. And what you would do, which is very, very important, you'll see you've got item gap, pin gap, and delta gap. Well, you wouldn't go out at item gap and come in at item. That would be tempting providence. Because if they've been lying out there watching, and they knew every time you went out, you came out there and went back there, they'd be waiting for you. So you go out at item and come in at King, right out the road. Not only a matter of 30, 40 yards, but a variation of route to get back in. Not the same pattern going out.
Would you
ramp barrier where you just set off from one position and come back?
Would you go out in any formation? I mean, would the at this stage you're only a private, but would the corporal be leading?
According to the book, yes, there's arrowhead, there's diamond. Again, it's all down to the terrain. Are you expecting, if we're a fighting patrol,
which is what this is, what we are
fighting patrol, well, we're going out to meet them, so you would move up in Indian file until you get out there, and then you would pan out.
Now, would you crawl out or would you walk out?
I wouldn't walk out. You might be going an hour and a half. Now, this business, you see, it's so hard, there is no book that can tell you what to do. It's the circumstances that dictate the formations. Now, if we're going out and we're practically certain I am going to meet the enemy out there, I am not going to have a close formation, because one burst would scatter a lot of us. Secondly, I can't afford to disperse too far or I'll lose control, because it's dark. I can't start shouting orders. So, you've all these factors to take into consideration, and a lot of it is done at the time. It's not him saying, you're going out tonight and this is the thing. That's rubbish. Once you step out of that wire, you're in charge. And you've got to let common sense prevail.
Now, just to interrupt, one thing I think is important is that while you were in Italy the first time, you weren't a patrol leader. You're drawing from your experience in Greece, Italy, and then Malaya and career, I think. So these are lessons that came to you. But at the time, it's fair to say that you were learning from what you saw.
Definitely.
So you were always thinking about how patrols were carried out.
Always.
So even
So
even when you were just a private, you actually had these points that you're discussing
always.
Now in mind.
Always. Because I saw... we've got to be truthful about this. It happens in every human form. I saw patrol commanders I didn't want to speak to after I'd seen what they'd done.
I'll come back to some examples of that. So, they take you through the wire, remembering, trying to keep to Italy mainly. They'd take you through the gaps in the wire. And then if you were on a fighting patrol, how do you achieve your objective of getting into a fight? If you see what I mean, especially as you seem to imply that German patrols were bigger, which I think they were.
100% bigger.
So they'd be at least 20.
Germans?
Yeah.
100.
Oh, sorry, by you mean
the company strength.
So,
80,
how did you go about, a fighting patrol without actually getting yourself into a situation you couldn't get out of? It sounds very difficult.
The thing is,
The object really of the exercise is to engage him and get away. Then at least you can come back and say, we engaged a heavy patrol activity in area 123, not weapons, etc. As I say, the idea, you can't engage in a gunfight and hope to win. So shoot up as many as you can. Hence, the 69 grenade was a great thing. If you could spot him, you would move out, and that's all far and lie. And you might lie half an hour and an hour. And then if you saw the movement, that all 69 was a gem. Over it went, and they scattered.
Now that's the stun grenade.
The plastic grenade. It was called the demoralizer at the time.
More so than the 36, then?
Well, it didn't kill nobody. It sent them crackers. I mean, they're walking along, quite unconcerned, because they're full of power. And right out of the blue, there's one hell of a bang in the middle of the night. It's dark. And they know they're fighting. So they don't know whether who's killed, who's dead, they don't know what's hit them.
Now, was it actually a bigger explosion than a Mills, than a 36?
For the effect, hell of a bang. Now, they don't know whether they've been hit with a bomb, a shell, a mortar, whatever. But it scattered them. You could engage them then, and then off.
So you'd open up then with the Sten gun?
With everything you had, and out as quick as possible.
How long would you fire for? Roughly.
Spasmodic burst. 5, 10, 15 seconds. Let fly, because you haven't time to mess about and then get back on your bike.
So you talk, say, 10 seconds and then off.
And off. Pre-arranged. You all know this. But by then you can start to shout your orders. Because the ghost is there.
So they'd know which way you were falling back.
Oh, they would, but they wouldn't be bothered.
No, sorry. The men in your... the men with you. And
they knew the way home.
So you'd know which way back. So the idea was to open fire and then get away in that 10 seconds before the German patrol could get itself together and open fire with superior firepower.
Well, in most cases, the German patrol wouldn't get itself together. It would be in total disarray.
So how long would that last for? Their disarrayment, I mean...
Well, you don't know. You're on your way back. They would fall back. They'd have pre-arranged plans. They'd say, if we're caught unawares, rendezvous and such, and we'll regroup.
Would they... I mean, one of your things you mentioned earlier was just to, if you didn't know what to do, just to fire in the general direction. Would they just open... Would some of them, perhaps a bit more clued up, just open fire in your general direction?
Certainly. Some of them be cooler than others. Instinctively, they would panic. Every man jack. Because they wonder what the hell's hit them. It's so sudden.
So this 39 grenade, you'd always 69. Have some... Six, you'd always have some of them with you.
Well, they weren't always available. But to me, they were a wonderful weapon.
And you used them in Italy?
In Asia. Yes, they were used. I'm not saying everybody used them, but they were used.
So then that was the objective. You'd open fire just on the general area of the... Would you pick targets, or would you just aim in the direction?
In the dark.
So it'd be a 10-second burst, or five, and then off.
And then when you come back, they say, did you kill anybody? Well, I should imagine we did. But how many? Well, I wouldn't know. Should we say, would 8 to 10 be a reasonable figure? Just for documentation. So yeah, you could accept that. But of course...
Is that for the patrol or for you? So
for the patrol. Oh yeah, everybody's let me. You might have missed one, you might have shot 50. You couldn't tell.
So it was a guesstimate?
Purely an estimate.
Now, anything else about a fighting patrol? What could go wrong? Because I think some of your patrols, when you were just an ordinary soldier, you mentioned some of the things that made... this is on fighting patrols. How would a fighting patrol leader sometimes go wrong, in your view at the time? Or do you remember any specific...
Well, not along the fighting patrol, if he does it properly, You see, that stage of the war, a lot of the lads were given a target or an aim for that patrol. And if he thought it was too tricky or too dangerous, he would cut it short. I'm not saying what he'd say when he got back, because he couldn't go and admit that he hadn't reached his target. And of course, the lads with him didn't need any encouraging to follow him, because it was safer. Now, I'm not saying how many did that, but it was done.
Did it happen with you on the patrol? When you were just following?
Not really.
What was it that annoyed you about some patrol leaders then, or was that on reconnaissance patrol?
Well, some of them, to me, before the patrol went out, set the scene doubt your confidence. Don't worry, we're not going to stick his necks up. Well, that's what we paid for, regrettably. It's not a holiday camp. We'll go as far as we think we'll justify that at least that area we contacted no one. Or if you were sent out to find the strength of troops holding there were a lot of farmhouses. How many's in that farmhouse? I said, all right, it looks dodgy to me. We'll put back information to the IO. Always on the plus side. Oh, there were 40 in there. There may have been no one. But this is understandable. They're not all, Colonel Jones in the 40s and that. They're working lads. They're doing their bit. They're taking the minimum chances, which is understandable.
Did you ever have one go wrong in Italy, the patrol? Or?
Not really one.
Now, what about reconnaissance patrols? How did they differ would there be a smaller patrol?
No.
Or was it the same number?
Similar. You might send two out.
Two reconnaissance patrols
to a British area. Now, you don't want to engage the enemy. That's the object of the exercise. Well, the object of the exercise is get information. But in no circumstances, engage the enemy. So you go out lightly armed. So you're not carrying a lot of ammunition, just sufficient to shoot your way out and get away. But the object is to pick up information.
So what would you take with you then?
Well, you take a Sten and about four magazines.
And how many would you have taken on a fighting?
Well, you take eight, if possible, double.
And what else would you... would that be all you had, or would you perhaps have a grenade?
You would take grenades, you go as lightly clad as possible, and then get out, look and observe. Now, if you wanted telecommunications, which is very important, between your patrol and the other one, so that you don't clash with one another, instead of coming up on the air loud, verbally, you would do clicks on the RT, on the wireless. One click for moving back, two for moving left, pre-arranged signals, so there was no, you weren't breaking radio silence, because the Germans could pick you up. And then your position was getting away, and